This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. So, so long since we spoke.
I know. And I have on purposely said, quick, let's just start recording because I have so many questions I want to ask you that I think should probably be in the podcast. Now, the first thing is I have noticed a definite change in the tone of what is happening in your corona life in Germany. And so I want to know what is going on and what is the corona update from Hamburg?
Well, we love a Tuesday because Monday's figures are always super low. So today's headlines are figures drop in Germany. But what it means is no one was tested on the weekend, so we don't have updated figures. So every week our graph starts low, goes up, peaks in the middle, and then comes down towards the weekend. But so Germany is reconsidering its current methods of managing corona. So we have this week in Hamburg, so there's the 11 biggest states or regions. Angela had a sit down with the leaders over the weekend and talked about what can be done. And there are some cities that have gone into an old fashioned lockdown of the March variety, for example, Berlin. So we have a case rate here where we talk about 50 people in 100,000. So once there's over 50 in 100,000 people tested positive, that's when we batten the hatches and duck under the doonas and go back to strict measures.
Got it.
Until we get to 50 in 100,000, we are managing and monitoring. Obviously, we don't just say, oh, it's one, oh, it's 50, let's do something. So we've got some interim measures. We hit 35 last week here in Hamburg, 35 per 100,000.
So then how many active cases is that in Hamburg then?
Well, you see, it's hard to say how many active cases. We don't always see, we don't always get, and this is the other thing, we don't always get the same statistics as the rest of the world get. We get new cases, we get 7-day lag cases, and we get total cases. So we've had 9,000 total cases since corona started. But we don't know how many active cases there are because in Germany you don't test negative to test out. 14 days as it's considered cured or the alternative. So it's a different kind of system and the way that we manage and monitor it here. But we look at a daily count and a 7-day count. Mm-hmm. So our daily count has doubled in the last few weeks, and that means we've gone from under sort of 20 a day to up in the high 40s a day.
Right. So that's 40 new cases a day.
Yes. But okay, with yesterday, that hasn't really happened. But and so it's so funny because, you know, that's if you compare that to what you're looking at, for example, in Australia, the Premier of Victoria, which is a state that is locked down and has a curfew and very strict measures, is saying 14 cases a day in the whole state is significant enough not to lift any restrictions. Whereas, you know, people are still, you know, kids are going to school. Well, it's school holidays right now, and that's another problem for next week. But, you know, public transport is still happening. Although we have had, as you know, masks and in public transport and inside buildings for some time. So we've gone back this week to masks when we're not at our desks, which is new. I mean, it's reinstating an old rule that we had.
Yes.
And I think businesses are re-looking at, you know, all the work from home things that were put in place last time. A lot of people still are working from home and never have gone back or are doing sort of part-time. Our office sort of the collaboration involved really needs people to be in the office. It's easier. But now when they're sitting together and having meetings, they're wearing masks as opposed to not. So, Kirsty, that little update sort of leads me into my first question, which is a corona culture shock. So yes, we talk about it quite a bit with each other. So a sort of off the air because we don't want to, you know, but there was a post a couple of weeks ago in the group.
Yeah.
Also talking about it. So moving from one place to another and having a totally different cultural and governmental response.
Nikki, I guess for instance, it's like I've been to the physiotherapist this morning and she is a German woman who is living in Australia. And she's from somewhere north, and I'm going to butcher where it's from, but maybe you can tell me. It starts with a K, maybe? Kiel. Yes, she's from Kiel. There you go. So she said it's a little bit further north. She said, when I said, oh, my friend lives in Hamburg, she said, oh. And she said it's very wet, very, very wet, very dark. I went, yes, we've established that. Anyway, but she was talking about exactly this as well. She was saying that her brother will say to her, I don't understand. Melbourne has, you know, 12 active cases and they're in lockdown. There's millions of people in that city. How can that be? And I guess this is this conditioning, isn't it, Nikki? Because at the beginning, yes, we were all in this together. We were all, you know, going into lockdown. We were all doing the things. And as time has gone on, each country has developed its own rules. You know, some countries, America, have people that have developed their own, you know, immunology that none of us have even know about. It is so different to be in one place to another. And so this culture shock, like this corona culture shock, I guess, of say my husband, who is currently here in Australia, who is in Adelaide, where there are zero active cases. There have been zero active cases for months and months and months, to the point that he can go to a football game and be in a stadium with 35,000 other people, or 25,000 other people, and yell and scream, which you would think would be the worst corona thing that could ever happen. But, you know, this has been going on week after week. We still have zero cases. We're still, you know, all okay. But he will have to return to Qatar, where he's going to really have his wits about him, because it's going to be a completely different environment and completely different rules. You know, even just getting off the plane, he will have to snap back into action. And I imagine for him, there will be huge culture shock because, you know, different country, completely different corona situation. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's been fascinating, you and I chatting each week. And you'll say to me, I don't get it, you know,
it seems so strange to me watching people at a sporting function, you know, like seeing you all seeing on your Insta stories you at the footy and singing and carrying on. My child is in the school musical and you can only practice with your own grade. So every day a week is a different grade goes to their school musical practice because that's how we live in the bubbles. There's all sorts of different rules in different places. And then people in the group were saying, you know, I've moved from one country to another where there was huge restrictions and now there's no restrictions and you feel really uncomfortable.
Yes.
And that's like when my husband was traveling back between Denmark and Germany. He's in Germany full time now. God help us all, because the cases in Denmark have increased substantially. So they're in a work from home situation. So he's working from his home here. And he would come across the border and walk into, and then they'd stop the car and walk into a service station. Everyone would yell at them, get out.
Yes.
You know, put a mask on.
Yeah.
Because in Denmark, there was no masking. Now there is people. Now you have to wear masks because the numbers have gone up. But it's just so easy to get into your way of life and your way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you've said to me before, you know, we were talking about a friend of mine here who is a indirect employee of the government. So the Australian government is trying to implement the same rules on them living in another country as they implement on their employees in Australia. And so the rule is that you can only travel to Australia and nowhere else.
Mm.
So you can't go to Denmark or to oh, we have to go east now because the west is bad. But, you know, actually everywhere's not looking good. But Denmark's okay. So you can't go to Denmark for the weekend because, you know, if you're in Australia, you couldn't go to Denmark for the weekend. And I was saying to you, I think that's so ridiculous and restrictive and just so short-sighted. And you were saying, why would you go to Denmark for the weekend? Yeah.
Why would you go to another country? Yes.
Whereas Denmark is an hour on the road and we're attached to it and there's no border. Mm. So do you know what I mean? So like Legoland, this school holidays was full of Germans because Danish people weren't having school holidays at the same time. So everyone in Legoland was feeling very comfortable that their corona warning app was working with everybody else because they're all Germans. So they would have all had the German app on their phone. So, you know, there's all that bits and bobs and pieces. And it's very interesting. So I've checked my corona warning app and I had one incident, close encounter with a person that later tested corona positive, my app tells me.
Wow.
But because it says that the time frame wasn't significant and I wasn't in really close proximity, then I don't need to be tested. So the app didn't even ping me. Oh. I just, when I go in to check it, it tells me that. And then it only keeps the data for 14 days. So then I went back in, it says you have zero people you've been in contact with that have tested positive for corona in the last 14 days. So that's also really interesting to me because I imagined had I my phone would start vibrating and shouting.
Warning. Code blue.
But in fact it didn't.
Now Nikki, enough from the misery of COVID and moving right along. I want to know what's been your best food discovery in your travels. And what I mean by that, like you've been somewhere and you've tried a recipe and you've just thought, oh my gosh, I want to know how to do this. I've got to go home and recreate it.
Yeah, well, I saw this and I thought about it a bit and I thought of all the places we've lived and how really took me a long time to get into Chinese food.
Were you a Chinese food eater before you went to Hong Kong?
I was not, because I would say that's the beginning of when I went is the beginning of the Asian food revolution in Australia. So I grew up on sort of dodgy Chinese restaurants with your sweet and sour pork and your beef and black bean sauce and your very old school Australian Chinese food. And I didn't enjoy that. And then when I went to Hong Kong and we would go to dim sum and I'd say to people, what's your favorite? It's a dumpling. I was like, but it's a dumpling, you know. And then by the time I left, I could, you know, tell you 10 dumplings that I loved. But it just did take me a while to get into that. And it's very complicated to make yourself. So I never really thought that. South Africa, a lot of meat. Love meat. I love it. But, it's more about cooking and, you know, it's more about the experience in South Africa, the entertainment experience of the being together for hours and hours and hours to cook one steak. And in America, well, not really. So I would have to come to Europe for that. And to be fair, when my friend and I went to Annecy, a couple of years ago, and the first night we had tartiflette and it was amazing. And I who doesn't love potatoes cooked in some sort of cream thing, but it was really just, I just thought, wow, this is amazing. This isn't your any kind of regular potato dish that you have. And bonus, it was gluten-free. My friend is a celiac. So, you know, she practically had tartiflette every night after that. But it was something that I did come home and make because I thought, you know, this is something that we could introduce into our house, you know. So that was, for me, I was really thinking that that's all I came up with, which is pretty sad and indicates the state of my cooking.
No, I know, because mine is really sad as well. That's what I find really interesting is because obviously we've had an opportunity to have some really great meals, you know, and do some great travel. But what made me think of it was I was having garlic bread the other day somewhere, and I had this little flashback of being with all the kids, and they were little. Like I'm thinking they were sort of 8, 8, 6, 4, 2, you know, that sort of age. And we were in California and we were doing a bit of a road trip and we stopped at this place called the Rusty Pelican. And part of the Rusty Pelican's gig is they bring out some garlic bread immediately, you know, upon arrival to keep you going, you know, until you've ordered. And this garlic bread was the most amazing thing that I had ever eaten. And we did the whole, we've got to find out how they made this. And I remember going home and sort of searching for it and finding it. And what it was just sort of a sourdough. So imagine like a sourdough French
baguette, you know,
long loaf. And then, yeah, a baguette. And then mayonnaise, parmesan cheese, butter, garlic powder, paprika, sort of couple of drops of sort of hot pepper sauce. And, you know, just you basically just fill all the bread like in between with that. And it is absolutely delicious, sort of toasting it all side up. Stunning. I think it's, you know, it's that whole paprika thing. But I mean, there's the most basic, simple thing after being able to eat in some really lovely places and have some really exotic things. But that's the thing that sort of stuck with us was the Rusty Pelican garlic bread. But also I think so much might be the location where you are. I remember G and I went to this amazing restaurant in Malta. It was an Italian restaurant, but the location was superb. We were sort of, you know, on right on the water, stunning scenery, had this pasta, thought it was the most amazing, you know, gourmet dish we'd ever had. At that stage, you could contact the gourmet traveler and like suggest a restaurant and their recipe. And I remember, you know, G wrote to them because, you know, he's the big letter writer.
He's the big letter writer. I love
that.
He
wrote to them, said, we've been at this incredible restaurant. They made this incredible dish, da-da-da-da-da. And then the gourmet traveler wrote back to him and basically said, yeah, you know, it was cream, bacon, pasta. What about, like it was so basic. But at the time it seems so exotic and so amazing. But, I mean, hey, that's Italian food, isn't it? It's so simple but so great. But, yeah, so I just wanted to ask you because I thought, you know, there is nothing better than recreating that meal when you get home and then you can eat it and remember sort of where you were.
And do you still make Rusty Pelican?
I haven't for ages, but I am going to make Rusty Pelican bread this weekend because, yeah, I had completely forgotten. It was just a little bit of a, oh, having garlic bread. Oh, gosh, when did we stop doing that? Do you know those family things when you go, when did we stop doing that? I remember my daughter always had her thumb in her mouth with one hand and her other hand she would kind of pinch her eyelashes and she did, you know, that was her from baby onward. And she stopped one day and it's like, I can't remember the day you just stopped doing that or when that didn't happen anymore. You know, the last time you bath your kids before they start bathing themselves and putting their own jammies on. You never remember the last time you did it. Yeah. And you can't remember the last time you did it, the last time you read them a story in bed. Someone needs to tap you on the shoulder and say, this is the last time you're going to do this.
And then you might be a little bit more patient rather than saying, last page, this is the last page. So, Kirsty, I have a question. And it's so weird because I think it's the age of social media question, but do you have a connection in a place or a location that you regret that you missed? And I'll give you my example because it's a weird question if you don't have context. So when I was living in Hong Kong, I think I'd been there maybe 4 years and I had a toddler, I had a baby, I think, and a toddler and a job and was very busy and was in the fourth year. You know, fourth year, you don't need new friends because you got your friend group and, you know, you're almost at the edge of that. You know, I'm a long term, I don't go, you know, that kind of thing. So I, even though you're also very open to meeting new people, but my mother sent me a message to say, my friend's daughter has moved to Hong Kong, you know, and she was single And so she was a single person, I don't know, 8 to 10 years younger than me. And, you know, she's moved to Hong Kong. And so, you know, here's her number if you want to look her up. And I was like, oh, thanks, Mum. That's great. And, you know, I sort of messaged her a couple of times. It was probably before text messaging, so maybe a couple of emails. And we just never, ever connected. Anyway, maybe a year later, or maybe 18 months later, my mum came with a couple of her friends and some other people, and they all came up for her wedding. And so everyone went to her wedding, and it was lovely. And I still didn't meet her because mum was staying with us, but obviously she went and did all the wedding things, blah, 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 blah. And then that was it. And then maybe less than a year later, we left Hong Kong. And since we've left Hong Kong, I have seen her. Like, loads of my friends became friends with her somehow, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And I've seen her comment on posts and, you know, she just is always popping up with sort of my friend group. And I think,
you're meant to be my friend.
I was meant to be your friend first.
Oh dear.
But it's so, and so I don't know whether it's FOMO or what it is, but I think, you know, I should have made the effort because obviously she's the sort of person that I would like. Whether she would like me is a whole different story, but my friends mm-hmm. are friends with her, and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm thinking that's real opportunity I missed there. And, you know, that's to my detriment, not to hers. But so, yes. And so I just think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, living an expat life and making new friends, it's hard yakka. You know, it's when you're the new person, it's mm-hmm. hard. When you're the older person, it's easier. Or for me, it was just like I just blew it off, which I now regret. Mm-hmm. I just think that's, I don't know. I'm just wondering whether, and it just came up again this week on my social media. And I thought, I'm going to ask Kirsty whether she has this feeling of FOMO or missed connections.
Definitely. And I have it on both sides. I have it on both ends of the people you left behind when you started to become an expat. Because, you know, I started my expat life when I was 30. And, of course, my group of girlfriends all continued to make friends too. So there are people in our group where I don't know that person as well as they know that person, do you know, because I didn't go out with them and go to nightclubs with them or, you know, have dinners with them or, you know, those sort of friendships that you make when you're, you know, getting together on a Saturday morning to discuss the date you had the night before or, you know, and you share those great details. So I have it in that way. But, yes, I know exactly what you mean in that, you know, you and I were talking about this the last time we were talking, so a couple of weeks ago. I had done a YouTube series called What Did I Have to Lose? And I had completely forgotten that I had done that series, right? Yes, and you reminded me because I went through a phase where I interviewed lots of people and videoed them and put hours and hours and hours of work and effort into it. I just absolutely loved it. But it was about expat women, and you know, what did you have to lose by jumping on that plane and taking off? And when I rewatched it, I saw obviously all these faces of women where I'd had, you know, the build-up of reaching out to them and asking them whether they would do it and them coming to the house. And, you know, the minute I could see them sitting on the couch and whatever, I'd think, oh, my gosh, that's how I know Kelly, who's in our book group. I'd forgotten that that's how I met Kelly, who's in our book group, because she had come to do that, you know, because we had gone on to be friends. But, of course, you saw other people where you went, well, I wonder why we didn't end up being friends after that, or you moved after that, or whatever. And I've had that a lot with between the four kids, 20 suitcases and a Beagle page, and doing that sort of work of people that you can't fit everyone in. You can't be friends with absolutely everyone. There is not enough time in the day. But people who reached out to ask you a question or, you know, could they borrow something or could they do something? And yeah, there was just too much between four kids and school and work and whatever. You can't have a coffee with absolutely everyone. And so, yes, there are a lot of people in my inbox where I think, or I see them on social media where I go, oh, well, that's what happened. They then went on to become friends with those people or did whatever. Absolutely. I don't think there's anything, while I guffawed out loud with your
my phone,
I was meant to be friends with you. Yeah, I totally get it. I completely agree. Yes, because you think, well, we were meant to be friends. And also when you leave that location and you see your group befriend the new expat person and you think, oh, I'm sure you'd really like me.
That's right.
But we'll never know. Yeah, yeah. Perfect. Okay. All right, Nikki, I want to know. I was looking on your Facebook the other day when you were sharing a beautiful story about your son saying, please don't make me the chicken soup anymore. And then I noticed when you said this lovely story about how you realized you weren't going to make your son the chicken soup anymore because he was leaving home. Eventually, one day, you weren't sure when, but he's requested. Someone asked about your chicken soup recipe and it was a flat no. It was just a, you will not get my chicken soup recipe. And I was like, wow, I need to find out why, Nikki Moffat, will you not share your chicken soup recipe with your friends? And which phase of your life did this chicken soup recipe come into it? And, yes, walk me through it.
Well, I don't think I made soup a lot. I've never made soup a lot. My mother never made soup. I think you're a product sometimes initially of your parent, of your childhood home and then what happens in that childhood home and how that works. And soup was never on the menu, and boarding school soup is not good. I don't know. It might have changed now in the 30 years. And your children at boarding school might like the soup they get, but I never did. So soup was not big in my home. But somehow I started just before we moved to Hong Kong making this soup, and it's so basic and so easy. And I just thought, oh, this is awesome. I can do this forever. And then my son took my little hands in his and asked me very nicely for as long as he lives at home, could I never make it again? So, but and then I'm thinking, well, it's not that great. You know, I don't put a lot of effort into it. It's got like four ingredients and I just throw them all in and it's done. So
someone thinks it's great though, because someone said, can I have that recipe?
Well,
was there rosoni in that soup?
There's rosoni. It's chicken leek and rosoni soup. It's basically that's it, and chicken stock. But I think that my son doesn't like the chicken stock flavor that I don't make my own stock, people. Here's an alert for you. So I'm buying your OXO cube type stuff.
So what are you doing with it? You're doing the stock, and then what sort of chicken are you throwing in there?
Well, I poach / boil the chicken breasts and then shred them.
Uh-huh. Yes. And so with the leek then and the bacon, do you pan fry that
There's
first?
No bacon, baby. It's just leek.
Oh, it's just leek. Right. And does that get pan fried?
The leek gets pan fried. So the leek gets pan fried like you would pan fry onions. And then I see what you're doing here. And then the stock goes in. And then the chicken breasts go in. And then when they're cooked, you shred them, put them back in, and throw the rosoni in, and then that, and lots of pepper. And that's it.
Ah.
And then you just have it with crusty bread. It's just like a good filler because it's almost like pasta.
I think it sounds good. Yes. I think it sounds good. I reckon the bacon would go well with
Yeah, you're right.
Too.
You're right.
When you were in America, did you ever have something called Italian wedding soup?
No, can't say I did.
Right. So when I used to go to the gym in Canada, they had something called Italian wedding soup. I know, odd, huh? I used to go to the gym to sit in the cafe and eat. But
because there was time.
Because they also had a creche. Yes, there was a creche. But they did Italian wedding soup. I'd never heard of it before, but I think it's very American because maybe it was something the Italians in America made. It's not a true Italian right. dish, yeah. But they did beautiful little like meatballs, but they were usually like a white meatball, like a chicken and pork with parsley and parmesan, yummy, yummy, right? And then a soup with the risotto. So I was thinking when I saw you were putting the risotto, but they called it orzo because that
yes, the I name mean it says sometimes it's orzo here, like whatever.
Yes,
I say risotto because that was the Australian, but here it also is called orzo.
Right. Okay. But yeah, absolutely delish. I might have to share that recipe with you.
You share your recipe. Put that link in the show notes too, and just ignore my link because it's not very popular in my house.
Now, Nikki, this is usually about the time when we talk about the four fat things that we've done or what we're trying to do or whatever, and, you know, keep ourselves on track. And I read the other day that it takes 66 days to form a habit.
No, I can't believe that. I did that walk every day for 50 days.
I know.
And it takes 66.
And that was the problem. You needed to do it for 66 days. And then
you used to think it was 30 days. It's
66. I thought it was 21. I'm sure I read that it took 21 days. Maybe it takes 21 days to break a habit. I don't know. But I did read on, you know, psychology.com or whatever, that it takes 66 days to form a habit. So the only thing I'm going to say for our four fat things or our three favorite things or whatever we called it that I have managed to get wrong, which I think is a good sign, we need to ditch that idea because I'm not even sticking to it and it was my idea. But I want you to think of one thing for next week, one habit that you think you could do for 66 days. And I thought that might be a fun thing if you and I came up with the one thing we think we can do for 66 days to see if it will form a habit.
66 days. That'll take us into next year almost.
Uh-huh. So think about it for next week. Okay. Your three favorite things that you have been watching, listening to, reading, whatever. What do you got?
Okay, so Harry Potter, revisiting Harry Potter's movies 1 to 7. Mm. I have for years, my son, my husband and I have read all the Harry Potter books, couldn't love them more. I understand the ongoing current issues with J.K. Rowling, but at the time we read the books as they were presented on face value. Absolutely love them. Watched all the movies and then I tried to get my daughter interested in them and she never, ever would be interested in them. And I was like, read the books. No, I don't like it. Watch the movie. No, I don't like it. Anyway, out of the blue for her 14th birthday, she decided that she wanted to have a sleepover party and watch Harry Potter 1 to 7. And now she's got all the books in her room. She's reading the books and she's knee deep in Harry Potter paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. She's, you know, we've got Slytherin scarves and candles, and she's a Slytherin, of course. That was always going to happen. And, she's just in love with Harry Potter. And so when she was watching them with her girlfriends, my husband and I would walk into the room and then we sort of like, oh, sit down, you know, just like get on the edge of the couch and start watching along. She'd be like, how'd you go? Oh, no, we've just totally forgotten. And so Harry Potter isn't anywhere for free. So we had to rent the movies. I think they're €3 for 48 hours on Amazon Prime or something. So she would watch them all and then I'd be like, oh, and my husband would walk in and say, what are you doing? I'm lying on the bed with my iPad. Oh, just catching a bit of Harry Potter. I just remember that I really enjoyed the books and I enjoyed the movies. And I think it's part of the COVID escapism that, you know, yes, you go back to something that you know and you enjoy and you really –
yeah,
that's a good thing. So that's number one on my list. Number two, Borgen. Borgen. Now, you've heard it a lot because it's new to Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
It's new to Netflix globally. It's been in Netflix in Europe for a while, but it's new to Netflix globally. So people are watching and commenting, and I think it's been on the ABC, on government, you know, on, you know, the very high-minded channels because it is, you have to, it's got subtitles.
Yes.
So here's the thing about watching TV with subtitles in this crazy world where you never do anything one at a time. So I don't think I sit in front of the TV without my phone ever. But when you have subtitles, too bad, too bad, so sad. You cannot do anything. You have to watch the TV.
Yes.
You have to watch and you have to read the subtitles. And so it is crazy. And it's like a new experience. It's like old school TV watching, because it's like you are fully engrossed in the TV.
Yes.
Now, it is a Danish political drama. And some people say, you know, it's sort of like if yes. the split were about politics, you know, it could be it. You know, it's got strong women's roles. It's got a bit of romance and some intrigue. And it's been out for a while. So, but there were three series and then it was cancelled. But Netflix bought it and has commissioned a fourth series. But so it's like it's got political personalities, it's got media, it's got spin doctoring, it's got romance, sex, geopolitics. And the interesting thing is it has the geopolitics from a non-US and UK perspective. So often we see things, political shows, and they're all about, you know, the US or the UK. Excuse me, promise not the COVID. They're the US and the UK, and they're sort of like from – they're the ones – running the world, you know, they're the ones leading and everyone's following. Whereas when you look at it from a Danish perspective, you know, they've got to form a coalition or be part of something, or, you know, they're not, you know, announcing world leading initiatives. So it is sort of interesting watching it from that perspective. And I am totally loving it. And, you know, it's getting a lot of airplay now. And a lot of people have said to me, you know, you should watch it. And so I did, because like I like to be a joiner, like, you know.
And you totally recommend, and you'd recommend it though. You've loved it.
I do recommend it. I have loved it, but you cannot, it's not a, I'm really tired, I'm going to watch an episode before I go to sleep, because you can't yes. lift your eyes. You have to have your eyes open. So you have to be sort of sit down to watch it. So yeah, totally strong recommend.
I am very glad that Netflix decided to keep it as a, subtitles and having to read, unlike Cuties where they threw in the American voiceover, which completely I struggled. I couldn't watch it because it was so obvious that it was in France and that it was dubbed. It was terrible. It was really – I couldn't get past the dubbing.
Oh, well, when I watched Cuties, which I don't know if we're going to discuss this now, maybe not ever, but I watched it in French with subtitles. Ah. I didn't see the version with the English dubbing. I believe that exists. I believe that exists with Verborgen as well, but it's not on German Netflix that way. It's on German Netflix as Danish French. With subtitles. Sorry.
Yeah.
Borgen, yes, and Cuties, yes.
Yes, yes. No, Cuties in Australia was only dubbing of American accents.
Oh,
and so
no,
I couldn't
that would have
do
spoiled
it.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't watch it.
Yeah, you and I had talked about, okay, because there'd been a conversation on the Two Fat Expats group about Cuties and whatever. So I did try and I did get through probably maybe up to the first hour, and then it was like, oh, I'm not coping with this with American dubbing.
Because it's also cultural. Like, I mean, it's all very to do with the French cultural, you know, and French current. And so I would think that would be very hard with American accents and Americanisms and that they're not using. You know, they're using, yeah, wow, that would be really tough. I think that that's the thing, but I think people like to have their phones on their laps while they're watching TV so that they opt for that maybe perhaps when they're doing things.
It's such a good point, Nikki. I've never, ever thought about it.
Anyway, and my last thing this week, which has taken so much of my time this week, but I am totally, totally happy to give it, and I haven't been on the social much at all, is I have a friend, a lovely friend here in Hamburg, and she's an Australian, and her daughter unfortunately has a brain tumour and had an operation 2 weeks ago and was told that was the last thing that they could do. They thought they could help her, but they couldn't. So she was sent home basically with palliative care, and basically it's a matter of time. And so, you know, her family are there with her. And so you feel so useless in that situation when there's nothing you can do. You know, the meal train's all full. You know, there's really nothing you can do. And so there were a group of us we were just beside ourselves and we didn't know what we could do. The Grace, the daughter, is an amazing singer. So she was on The Voice Kids Germany 3 years ago. Yeah. And she has an amazing voice. And you know, she's a great singer, and she was off on a singing career until 2 years ago that the tumor sent her, made her blind, and she's had a lot of problems in the last 2 years. But she was on The Voice, Kirstie, and guess who her mentor was on The Voice Germany, kids?
Who?
Nina. Nina from 99.
Wow.
Now, if you told me any, if I, exactly right, right? So any other person you would never have heard of, but when I was like, it was Nina.
I know who you are.
Anyway, so what we, a group of friends and I did was we started a social media campaign, which is hashtag Sing for Grace 2020. And so we were trying to get Lady Gaga and Taylor Swift to send Grace a message to say, you know, well wishes on your way and good luck and everything. And so you sort of, we just sort of started off and we thought, okay, and we're all setting up different accounts. It's all a bit over, all over the shop. But anyway, we got into it and we have had thousands and thousands of messages. We've had people sing songs. We've had people write original songs for Grace. We've had a few of the crazies as well send us, you know, rhubarb and herb solutions, but we have had overall the most amazing response, and it's honestly the positive side of social media. I mean, within a week, our Facebook page has had something, you know, reached over 220,000 impressions, you know, when you have the stats on the page.
Yes.
And we've had Delta Goodrum, Guy Sebastian.
Yes.
You wouldn't have heard of Michael Schulte, but he is a very big German pop star. and on Saturday morning I woke up and there was a freaking message from Lady Gaga.
Just brilliant.
And it was amazing. I've never cried watching Lady Gaga speak before, but I honestly was beside myself.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, it wasn't our little social media campaign. It was a friend of a friend of a friend. But it's all part of the positiveness of it, right? So it's just,
and I did see
everybody getting together.
I did see one with some kids walking down the street singing Taylor Swift, and they had a piano. Who was that?
Yeah. That's a choir in a region of Germany who did that. We've had whole schools like stand socially distanced on their quadrangle and sing songs. And, I mean, we have had the most amazing feedback. I mean, Grace went to a rehabilitation center in southern Germany last year, and all the nurses from there said, we can't sing, but give us a coffee and we'll dance. And so they did this whole skit about it. And, I mean, there has just been the most incredible response, and it's just one of those things where
that's brilliant.
It's honestly the good side of social media.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the feel-good side of it, and it just really – but it's really interesting because when sort of Delta Goodrum and all the Australians in Hamburg were going, oh, my God, it's Delta. Look at Delta. You know, whereas the Germans have no idea. And they're like, oh, that's nice. You know, where's Taylor? You know, let's get Nina. So, but it's so funny because it really shows the cultural divide and the difficulty of a global movement because, you know, we've got some followers in Germany, some in Australia, some in the US, but not in, like, if they're all together and all doing one thing at the same time, you know, it'd be different, but they're all different and they all have different sort of understandings and cultural points of view on stuff. And so it's really, that side of things is so interesting. Anyway, I'm learning a lot about the socials. Who knew, who thought I could learn more or spend more time on them, but I am. But I'm just really enjoying it. And, you know, we really hope, we're really aiming for Taylor Swift. So if anyone knows Taylor Swift, we've got Lady Gaga. So tell her, you know, we're waiting. Contact me.
I think that's lovely. I cannot imagine the pain that your friend is going through, because to lose a child or just to watch a child be ill. I cannot imagine, but it's a beautiful thing you guys have done. It's so, so gorgeous. Okay, so Nikki, what have I got? I watched, and I am still watching, but I'm into the second episode of The Murdoch Dynasty, which I watched on ABC iView, but it was on BBC earlier in the year. I don't know if you've caught it, Nikki, yet. But it kicks off sort of in 1995, which is just an absolute blast. You know, I can't talk for what's going to happen in the future, but just for episode one of they're really looking at the political involvement back in those early days. And, you know, that it was so brazen. And I don't know whether it was because I was young or just ill-informed, but why wasn't I looking at the fact that Murdoch was, you know, on Hamilton Island with David Cameron, Paul Keating, Alastair Campbell, all of these people that you go, wow, like just that social interaction and the meetings that must have been had and the relationships that had developed. And just the undercurrent. You know, I remember Alastair Campbell said that when they all went to Hamilton Island, he can remember that Paul Keating said to them, you know, there's two things you need to know about Rupert Murdoch. He's a really hard bastard and the only way to deal with him is to be a really hard bastard or he'll have no respect for you. And the second was that his only priority is himself and his business interests. And it was like, woof, it is fascinating to watch his relationship with his children and then to get a feel for how those children must have been played off against each other.
Is it a show or is it a documentary series?
It's a documentary. Yeah. So no, it's called The Murdoch Dynasty. It was on BBC. Now it's on ABC iView. So yeah, it's going back and they are interviewing people like Alastair Campbell and past editors of News Corp newspapers. And I think that's what makes it really interesting is, you know, having Hugh Grant talk about his experience with the paparazzi and the phone hacking scandals and how they realized their phones were being hacked. You know, there was a lot that was talked about it at the time with the phone hacking, but I think even then we got so caught up in what it was that was being hacked and the information that was being had. It's really good to now go back and go, shit, you know, how did you, any of you, think that what you were doing was reasonable? You know, or journalism? Was it because I was young that I didn't question that more? You know, there is news footage of these people getting
of all of them
and, you know, all together and, you know, and it was all very lovely. You know, you have the kids and Mrs. Murdoch and, you know, the wives of people and, you know, the whole thing. And you're going, oh, hang on, why weren't we all jumping up and down and screaming then? Or maybe people were, but I was too young to really understand why that was so wrong.
I wonder now, though, would your children be, are they more politically engaged than we were? I think we weren't necessarily as politically engaged. Our generation was the last one maybe to have that, you know, you care about things more as you get older. You care about healthcare once you have children. You care about family leave and planning and all this sort of stuff as you get older. And when you're younger, as long as there's no great recession, even though I came into the workforce when there was a bit of a downturn, I still ended up with a job. So I didn't really, I was all right, mate. You know, like I had a job, I could pay my way. I didn't care so much about it. I didn't have that. I read the papers, but I didn't have sort of any level of questioning or certainly no level of outrage. I think maybe politics has got more entertaining now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It could be. I think you're right. And I think, you know, now Trump openly talks about his friendship and relationship with Murdoch. And so, yeah, I think our children are probably far more politically aware, and maybe it's easier for them to be. They can watch things more so than
you're not sitting down once a day to the news, which we just sat down once a day to the news. Like, and if we missed it, we missed it. You know, like,
they also have news that's catered to them because you think unless we were going to read the, if we were going to read the newspaper that morning before school, well, no kid was ever going to do that, or sit down for the 7 o'clock news in the evening. you know, and maybe you caught bits there, whereas our children now are watching YouTubers and have specific news that's catered for them and marketed at them.
Yes, TikTok. It's a tool to move the masses, I tell you, TikTok.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing that I watched that I thought was absolutely brilliant was a series on the ABC in Australia called Lockdown. And it was brilliant. It showed everybody's different situations in lockdown. It was obviously made a little bit earlier in the year. So we had all different cases that, you know, whereas the Jewish family in Melbourne and what they were having to do to sort of get together as a family on Friday nights and how that affected their life, or the girl who was in Brisbane on her own, whose mother had to go back overseas to look after her family, and just what it was like to be alone as an 18-year-old in an apartment when your mothers had to leave, and how she kind of got herself going. But there was also a great young Aboriginal woman who is in the Aboriginal community. I don't know, Nikki, if you've read much about it, about how what lockdown looked like in Aboriginal communities. Like, they're basically, if you were out, you did not get back in because they were so conscious of what COVID could do to an Aboriginal community. And so still in Australia, if you're on the road, if you're driving through certain areas, there will be huge signs that say do not stop. You know, you still, when we have where there is, you know, zero COVID, they just do not want to risk it getting into certain communities in the Northern Territory or the outback. But there was this great story, and this one really touched me for obvious reasons, and it was a Brazilian man who married a Lithuanian woman, and they live in Australia. And they got married about the 9th of March. So both families flew into Australia. So he had his Brazilian family and she had her Lithuanian family flew in. And then her Lithuanian family flew out immediately, sort of on the Monday, but his Brazilian family were staying for a couple of weeks and they got stuck. And if there is anything to make you feel uncultured, watch the Brazilian family keep themselves amused in lockdown, you know, where grandma says, oh, well, I'm learning another language, and the mother is dancing with the sister in the backyard and they're doing, you know, Brazilian dance moves and creating new things. And, you know, I think someone starts writing a novel and someone's doing art and drawing and painting. And the only one who really isn't doing anything really creative is the dad, who is spending a lot of time on his phone. And so there's a lot of different stories going into this, but one of the stories is how the dad sort of starts to listen to the conspiracy theories and them back because he's on his phone all the time, right? So these things keep popping up in his phone. And so you sort of see how the son is trying to steer his father away from the conspiracy theories by doing more things together to get him off his phone and get away from it. But obviously it all ends with them having to go home. And you know, for me, watching mum and the kids and grandma go back, and he is facing the, you know, he doesn't know when he's going to see them again, which I have coming up in my future. You know, if G's going back, there will be the goodbye where we don't know when we'll get to see him again because we don't know when he'll get back in. But watching him, on top of the I don't know when I'm going to see my grandmother again, but the grandmother saying, you know, 68,000 people have died in her area where she lives in her city. And, you know, so there's that fear of, you know, is she going to get sick and what's going to happen to my family when they go? It is absolutely heart-wrenching watching the goodbye at the airport. And you can't help but think about the Lithuanian bride who signed up to get married and then have the entire family stay. But absolutely loved this series because it really did show you just a vast range of families and every different presentation of a family of how lockdown looked. It was brilliant.
And that's really amazing. Loved it. How many shows was it?
It was all one.
Because I was going to say, how switched on were they to get right on it, like, and to be able to produce it and to come up with those different
people
things. I mean, that's so clever. Yeah. That's why those people work in television production.
Yes.
But, you know, like, it just sounds like such an amazing snapshot of Australia, you know, from the Aboriginal community to the immigrants to to the whole thing. Like, it sounds like a really amazing.
The girl on her, you know, you would think that the girl on her own in Brisbane would have been, you know, not the greatest story to watch, but it really, for me, being the mother of a teenage daughter, it really made me think about the language I use when I text my daughter, because you can see the daughter's sort of sitting in her room trying to keep herself engaged and busy and happy, and she's waiting for her mum to call, and then the mum saying, you know, can I talk to you later, kiss kiss, and you can see the devastation where she says yeah sure, but she's devastated. Do you know, and it just reminds you of when you're talking to your teenage children, they can sound so offhand, but there can be so much more going on. Anyway, and my last one, I can't choose, Nikki, whether I talk about food or I talk about Caitlin Moran. I think I'm going to talk about Caitlin Moran.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yes. So last one, I read a great article called How Can I Help My Teenage Daughter, written by Caitlin Moran. And then I realized it was extracted from More Than a Woman, which is her latest book that she's written. And just today I loved, she was on The Drum and she was talking about living, what it means to live a hag life, which I sent it off to two of my girlfriends who went, oh God, I hate that term hag. But also, yeah, I'm embracing it. I'm doing it. But she talks about perimenopause and life as a, you know, woman in middle age, and she just raises so many great points about feminism in young women and then getting older and how there just isn't any discussion about sort of what comes next and amazing women of a certain age. And I am hot, hot, hot on this at the moment, Nikki. It just seems to be popping up in my world all the time, and I obviously, because I am 50, and it's that I want to see more women my age doing more things and talking about why this is great, but also because I am in a time in my life where my parents are needing me a lot right now. And, you know, I have a lot going on with my husband and his health, and then a lot going on with my children. And that feeling of just trying to be the cheerleader and the, I don't know, the, what are you? Almost like a parent to your parents, but that sounds so condescending because it's not true. It's just that they do need us right now.
It's the sandwich. You're the sandwich. Yes. The sandwich generation.
Yes. While trying to still be me. And, you know, I had a fantastic walk with a couple of girlfriends I hadn't seen for a long time. One of my girlfriends was talking about how she feels that she's so full of rage all the time and putting up with angry old men, as she may have been talking about her husband. But it's a whole different conversation of this age. And you go, you know, we don't hear this enough. We don't hear about this. We hear about the excitement of relationships and children and whatever. Nobody ever talks about, you know, or they do talk about it. Maybe they just don't get heard. I don't know. Have you seen any of the Caitlin Moran stories at the moment?
No, I haven't, but I thank you for sending me the link as well. And so I started to have a look at it before the podcast, but I didn't get to finish it. So that's definitely something I'm also interested in having a look at. So, and perhaps reading the book.
Okay. I reckon that's about it for us, isn't it? Did you give me three? Yeah.
I gave you three. You gave me three. We're all three in. But it's just because we haven't spoken for so long, so we've already got our three lined up for next week as well.
Okay, I will leave you to your week, and I will catch up again next week.
Okay, speak to you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.